Good afternoon, everybody. This is Blake Ruby from San Antonio. Welcome to my show. Spirits can exist on the sun because it's named that way because you have a spirit inside your body, an astral body, a spirit, whatever you want to call it. And that's what lives on when we pass away here on Earth. And the soul is the brain of the spirit. And guess what the spirit is made of? Light energy. And guess what the source of light energy is for our solar system? Yes, welcome to a solar system, my friend. We're on a planet revolving around sun. Yes, and rotating on our axis. Isn't it amazing the power that it takes to do that? Not only our planet, but all the other planets in our solar system. Not only our solar system, but other solar systems in our galaxy, and other galaxies in our universe, all held together by the power of gravity, or whatever you want to call it, it's a force. And that force is kept in existence by the supreme creator of the universe who initiated it all with the Big Bang. Yes, it's true. One solar system after another, and here we are, 15 billion light years away, my friends, enjoying the ride, right? Well, how you been? How was your week? My week was good. Just the same as the previous week, pretty much as far as work is concerned. Out here on my patio, enjoying teleworking. Here in Texas, you might have heard, the coronavirus numbers have been going up. So whereas we were going to be reintegrated back into our work on Fort Sam Houston with the Army as a civilian, the commanding general has delayed the different phases. And so my phase probably won't go back to work, depending if everything stays the same, or that is, if there is some improvement, we're hoping that there will be. But I won't be going back to work until maybe August sometime, if perhaps even September. And so we see the coronavirus still going on. States like California, Texas, and Florida, which are the most populated states, some of the most populated states, the coronavirus numbers are going up. People are catching it. I don't quite understand. I thought that the heat would be helpful in getting rid of it. But one thing that I do want to say, in my opinion, and I've noticed this in regard to any type of virus, the ordinary flu, which I've had before and you've had probably before, I've had it more than once. Don't forget to get your daily doses of fresh air and sunshine. We know, right, that we live in an oxygen-depraved society. These buildings that we live in for some of our life during the day, our houses, do not have ideal, optimal oxygen/nitrogen levels for the body to function like it's supposed to. Some people may say, well, you go outside and you're exposed to all the allergens and the sunshine, which can cause cancer, the ultraviolet rays can. Well, I say, in regards to that, I say this. I say, first of all, the allergens exist. There's no evil plan out there to destroy human beings. That's a subject worth a further discussion, but my point is, the allergens are there. It might be that your diet needs to be changed. Perhaps too much sugar. And the sunshine is the natural source of vitamin D. So I submit to you that to make yourself more immune to withstand a possible future encounter with the coronavirus or any virus, ensure that you get your daily amounts of vitamin D and fresh air. Okay? I'm doing all right. Our family is too. So hopefully, God willing, that will continue. And I hope everything will be fine for you too. Oh, what a day. I got up this morning and went to the track on Lackland Air Force Base and got my sunshine and fresh air. I've been running now for about 3 years. I used to run all the time when I was in the Army, and I got a profile because it was shortly after I donated one of my kidneys to my son back in 1995 that I realized that I just couldn't push it to the limit anymore like I've been doing. When I was in the Army, you may have heard, we had a physical fitness test twice a year, and that encompassed 2 minutes of push-ups, 2 minutes of sit-ups, and a 2-mile run. And up until I joined in 1982, and up until about 1989, I was never able to get a perfect score on the physical fitness test. But that changed. I kept pushing myself, trying harder, and eventually it got so that I could, what they call, max the PT test. And so for my age group at that time, I had to do about 70-some push-ups, 70-some sit-ups, and run the 2 miles in about between 13 and 14 minutes. Well, I got to the point where I was good enough to max, get perfect, in other words, on 9 PT tests in a row. And then at the peak of my physical fitness when I was 38 years old, I went to the basic non-commissioned officer course in Fort Benjamin Harrison. I was a staff sergeant, E6. And we had an Ironman competition within our regular PT test that we took just after we got there. And I entered in the competition, and I got 88 push-ups and 88 sit-ups in 2 minutes, and I ran the 2 miles in 11 minutes and 56 seconds. I could always run at that time. I could always run 2 miles in less than 12 minutes. It was an amazing thing because I would go for a run, and inevitably, by the time I finished, I was always within a few seconds of 12 minutes, either 1 or 2 seconds less or 1 or 2 seconds more, without even looking at my watch the entire way. That's just the pace I had, at a good pace. And before that, before I got to, well, actually, I didn't tell you where I went, 1994. That was 1993, actually, for the BNOC, Basic Non-Commissioned Officer course. But between 1992 and 1993, I was in the Language Institute in Monterey, California. There in California, where BBS Radio is. Hey, kudos to BBS Radio. Thank you very much for all that you're doing to help make the world a better place. And all the great shows that you have on BBS Radio. It's an amazing thing to be able to talk for an hour. And those out there who are listening in internet radio land, thank you for joining my show, either now or later when it will be archived. Because you know I talk about all kinds of good stuff. I've got lots of courage to talk about the esoteric things like the spirit and near-death experiences and extraterrestrial phenomena, right? So anyway, from 1992 to 1993, I was at the Language Institute in Monterey, California, and I studied Turkish for 1 year. In my class, I had 3 other military guys, an Army major, an Air Force special agent, E5 equivalent, and a Navy O5, who was a nuclear physicist, submarine commander. And so we had a great time over that 1 year, but during that time, I was also the captain for the golf company. I was in golf company. They have Alpha, Bravo, Charlie, Delta, Echo, Foxtrot, Golf. In other words, A, B, C, D, E, F, G. Companies in Monterey at the time they did. I don't know about now. They also had the a Marine detachment there. And they had some Navy SEALs sometimes. So we would compete every month in what they called the Commander's Cup competition. And it was a two-mile run. At first it was around the track there, and then they changed it to around the Russian school. And so being the captain, we'd train 5 days a week. We'd meet at 6 o'clock in the morning. We would do some warm-ups and go for a run. It could have been an 8 mile run down to the beach along the ocean there, Pacific Ocean, or hill runs. For those of you that are familiar with Monterey, there's a huge hill that goes up into the installation. I mean, I'm talking about a huge hill. And you run hills and you're going to get better. And we also would do a PT test just for practice, you know, the push-ups, sit-ups, and the run. We would do fartleks, which are runs when you run the formation in a single file, and then the person at the back runs all the way to the front, sprinting. And then when he gets to the front, slows down, and then the person at the back also runs to the front, and so on. And we had a really good team. I had the ability to choose who I wanted to be on the team, and the incentive was that they didn't have to work out with the other company members during the regular PT, and so I was a good leader, I think, a good captain, and I treated everybody fairly and with respect and dignity. Anyway, we would compete once a month, and so the way we had to run was we had two rows of five, and I would be on the side, and we had a guidon bearer in the front. And we wouldn't be running at the same time. We would run staggered, but it would all be timed. So whoever had the fastest time for the 2 miles would be the winner. And during the 1 year I was there, we won five times and came in second place four times. And I thought that was pretty good, you know, a nice feather in my cap, proud of that accomplishment. But also during 1992 and 1993, the McFarland High school cross-country team also won the championship, state championship. I mention that because that's been one of my favorite movies recently. McFarland USA with Kevin Costner. I've watched that movie, no kidding, over the last 3 months about 15 times just because it's about running. You know, I've been studying the way they run, the socks they wear even, you know. It's inspiration, it's motivation for me, because like I mentioned, I am into running. And so 1992 and 1993, I was there at Monterey, California, at the language school. And I did well, by the way. I graduated. Had a good GPA, about 3.5 for 1 year, which was not easy. Anyway, so that at the end of the movie, McFarland, USA, they show the school, and up on the wall of the school in the front of the school are the years 1987 when they won their first championship. Anybody there in California from McFarland listening to my show? Welcome. Some of the actors in that movie are really awesome, which is also a further inspiration for me to watch it. I watched it today. I fast-forwarded to the parts that I like. Mainly the racing parts. And so the end of the movie, it shows the different state titles they won, 9 altogether in 14 years, which is kind of like me and my role as the leader of the one team, you know. The man who was in charge for the McFarland High School cross-country team, his name was Jim White, and he did a great job in coaching them. So that, to me, is a, a great example of leadership when you can take a number of young men and turn them into really good runners. And in my opinion, running is the ultimate competition. You get out there, I mean, you don't have a ball. You don't have to dress up. It's just you and your body and how hard you can push it, competing with other young men or women. It's great, you know. And so when I see the end of that movie, they have the music soundtrack, and at that time it sounds so, it just takes me in a trip through the past. You ever had that happen before? You hear some music and it just takes you back into the past, and I just remember 1993, I was there in California, close to McFarland, you know. They were doing their thing and I was doing my thing, but in a way, I felt like a connection between me and them. So I was also mentioning, you know, for those of you that are listening out there to BBS Radio, it's a really cool thing to be able to have your own show. And if you can afford it, and it's worth it, in my opinion, have your own show. And I know that there's a lot of people out there, everyone's passionate about some kind of subject. And to be able to talk for an hour is an amazing thing. And I'm a public speaker. I practice it. I'm a member of Toastmasters. I've mentioned this before on other radio shows. To me, public speaking is the future, you know, and it's here right now. It should have been implemented many years ago. When I was growing up as a young boy in school, even from kindergarten on, I can remember being very shy, you know. To get up in front of the classroom was like a different planet, you know, where you can't breathe properly, you can't talk properly. But it shouldn't be rocket science, right? It's just a question of getting used to it. And kind of like, you know, imagine as an example, when you're learning to fly an airplane and you're with an instructor until you come to the point where you have to solo and you're heart's beating fast, you know, when your mouth feels dry, your nerves are rattled, but you go ahead and do it. Well, that's the kind of feeling I was trying to express, what it's like for public speaking, you know. But it really shouldn't be rocket science, you know. It's just a matter of the heart, you know, controlling the way you feel, how you feel inside your skin, you know. Some people can do it better than others. You see these people on television, you know, on CNN, for example, the television news stations. All these people there, they know how to control their feelings. They know how to talk. And I admire that, but everyone should be able to do it, you know? So Toastmasters is one good way to get over that fear of public speaking, to get over your shyness, embarrassment, but also having a radio show on BBS Radio and getting a chance to talk for an hour, it builds your confidence. There's no way around it. It does. So what I'm going to try to do is tell you a little bit more about myself on this show. I don't have a guest with me. Last week I had Vivian Chauvet, an intergalactic healer. Her website is www.infinitehealingfromthestars. And nobody this week. I'm going to see if I can get a guest on, maybe ask her to come back next week or whenever she's available. And I'm also looking for other people. If you're interested in coming on my show and talking about whatever that is very spiritual, you know, a near-death experience you had, perhaps, or an encounter with extraterrestrials. That's what I like. That's what I'll choose. So I was mentioning earlier about some of these things that I do, besides getting fresh air and sunshine. And the exercise that I've found that works best for me, and I tried to run. I mean, I used to run all the time, as I mentioned. You know, I was into running 2. I could run 2, 4, 6, 8. I ran a couple of half marathons, a 10-mile, Army 10-miler once. So now, I tried to, last month, was it earlier this month I stopped? I did a mile. I ran a mile or a mile and a quarter every other day without stopping. And I realized, I found out that my body was getting kind of run down. And that didn't feel good, you know. I enjoyed the running. I enjoyed the feeling afterwards. Take a cold shower afterwards. It feels good. You're on automatic for the rest of the day. But I also stand all day. I like to stand when I type behind my computer. That's what I do mainly. I work at database. That's what I do for the Army. And I used to sit and type. They said that that's not good. And I have a back condition. You know, I broke my, fractured my spine when I was young. I think it was because I slipped on ice, although I can't say for sure. But when I was very young, maybe 3 years old, I slipped on ice and fell backwards. And I broke my fall with my right elbow, and I felt something jam in my neck and my back. So it was 1997, and I wanted to get, I just had the kidney donation operation, you know, giving one of my kidneys to my son. And somebody said, you know, why are you doing, still doing the PT test? You shouldn't have to do that. And something didn't quite feel right. I went and got some x-rays in my spine, and they found that I had fractured my spine, which resulted in the misalignment of my fourth and fifth lumbar vertebrae. And so the Army gave me a profile for not having to do sit-ups. Shortly thereafter, I went back, and I got a profile for push-ups. And then in 2000, I got a profile for running. They tried to convince me. I went to a board, sat in front of some high-ranking officials, sergeants major, and I think the colonel or two that was on the board, and I think an 06 colonel, full-board colonel, was the head of the board. And they said, well, you could take anti-inflammatory drugs to be able to continue running. And I said, no, I don't want to take any drugs. Thank you. I'm donating one of my kidneys to my son, and that won't work. And they said, okay. Well, they approved my P3, they call it, profile, which means you don't have to do push-ups, sit-ups, or run. All I had to do was a 2.5-mile walk every 6 months, and I was deployable worldwide. But now I'm getting back into running because I'm not in the Army, you know. There's other requirements, physical requirements in the Army, which didn't mean because, what I'm trying to say is that because they said I didn't have to run in the Army, doesn't mean I can't run now. I really enjoy the runner's high, but the continuous running is, in my opinion, from what I've found, is kind of hard on the body, you know? And so I did a little research, and I found a new method, a method called the Jeff Galloway method. How many of you have heard of that method? Okay, I see your hands out there. Yeah, a lot of you. No, I'm just kidding. So with the Jeff Galloway method, it's called the run-walk-run method. You run for a certain period of time, and then you walk for a certain period of time, and then you continue running and so on, repeat. And if you're going to run a marathon, that's a way that you can make it to the end. And in fact, they say some people that have experimented with that compared to running without stopping, that it's quicker by a few minutes than just running without stopping. And it's not as hard on your body afterwards, the recovery period, you know. Your joints, your knees, your back, it's all easier to take. So what I found that what works for me best now is I like to go into a track. I like to go to a track because the ground that you're running on, walking and running on, it's made of like a cork kind of material. So the impact is less. What works for me now is I'll run a lap. First, I'll walk a lap to warm up. And I'll run a lap, walk a lap, run a lap, walk a lap, run a lap, walk a lap. I did three today, three ran 3 and walked 5. So I did 2 miles. And I feel good. Not the same kind of hard feeling that running without stopping does. But if you're young, you can take it, you know, like I was at one time. But now I'm 65, I'll be 66 in August. And what else about myself? I'm drinking water here. My water of choice, I've tried all the different brands, Aquafina. No, what I like best is Dasani. It's made by the Coca-Cola company, Dasani. It's a little bit more expensive, but it's high-quality H2O, my friends out there. Yes, you are, my friends. Thank you for listening to my show. Whether you're in Russia or China or South Africa or Venezuela and South America, maybe in the Caribbean, Florida, in Ohio, in Canada, in Japan, where one of my stepdaughters lives, or in Mexico, or in Germany, or in England, where I have a lot of relatives, listening to BBS Radio, which reminds me, I've got to listen to some more shows. I've been tuning in to some of the other shows. Brilliant people who like to talk, you know? That's what it's all about, talking. And, of course, everyone loves that. They love to have people listen to them. These people on CNN. I walked by the TV on the way out here to my patio to begin my show, and they were talking. They talked their talk, but, you know, I never heard the word God come from their mouth once. And they might tell them that, hey, you can't talk about your personal beliefs. But it would be nice to hear once in a while, you know, God willing, or may God help the people. You know, say a little quick prayer on television. I can't even do that, you know. God and country, you know. Our founding fathers, they envisioned God in everything. You can't deny that. Whether you knock them down because they had slaves, which is what I've been hearing a lot of recently, but how many of you out there like Leonard Skinner? I was watching them on TV. I love them. I love Leonard Skinner. I saw them several months before their plane crashed. You know, and that just broke them up. Like, they were never the same afterwards, but they kept on going, you know, with some of the original members. And now there's only one original member, Gary Washington. And Leonard Skinner. I saw him on TV, you know. Why did I start talking about them? Because, it doesn't matter. I lost my train of thought, but that's okay. The Dasani water, I was saying, good quality water. And told you my best exercise. I'm telling you a little bit about myself. I'm sharing a little bit about myself to you so you get to know me better. I served 22 years in the Army, so kind of army-oriented everything I do. I've got discipline. I'm a firm believer in discipline being what's good. I think if every young man and woman in the United States could join the military for a couple of years, and some other countries around the world do it, it's a good idea. Not only does it teach discipline, which I think is the most important thing to learn in your life, but also teaches you teamwork, camaraderie, they pay well, you've got benefits. Yes, you have to take orders, but pretty much you'll have to take orders wherever you are in your walk of life, unless you're self-employed, and even then, you know, you're still answering to your customers. You have to be nice to your customers, and yes, sir, no, sir, you know, that kind of thing. So, as a runner, what are my best socks, I tell you? I've gone through so many socks. Hope you're liking this. You know, I've got something else planned. I'm going to read a near-death experience or two if I have time. I'm already halfway through my show. Man. So I've got this really incredible near-death experience I'm going to read to you. It's an amazing near-death experience. I'm going to try to get to two of them, but if I can't, I'm only going to read one. But about myself, my favorite socks. so far are the kind that come up about halfway up the calf. If you're a runner, you might want to pay attention to this because I've done a lot of experimentation. I've taught a lot of stocks, to tell you, over the last several months because I feel that some socks just didn't work for me, you know, and I stand them on my feet all day. I tried compression socks. I tried the no-show socks. I tried different brands, runner socks, Balega, Features. Tried socks I bought in the TX on the Post, you know, the local Post. But try to, if you're looking for a good brand of socks and you want to take it from me, you know, take my advice. Blake, you know, Blake Ruby's advice, you know, I talk about all aspects of our lives, you know. I'm not afraid to talk about anything, give you advice about anything. You know, there's so much, I could talk on for 4 or 5 hours on every aspect of my life, you know. My diet, how I sleep. Sleep without a pillow now. I sleep without a pillow, how about that? For my last 7 years in the Army, I slept without a pillow. But going back to the socks, they're called Thorlo, T-H-O-R-L-O socks. Made from Thorlon, which is a very good material, very comfortable, well-made socks in the heel and the toe. This sounds like a commercial, doesn't it? And you can buy them on Amazon.com, you know, I'll ship them to you. And they're kind of expensive, but they're worth it, you know. So my feet have always been giving me problems of, you know, as I've gotten back into running again. And hopefully these continue to work out for me. But going back to the pillow, look on the internet. See what I mean about sleeping without a pillow. If you ever have neck or back pain in the morning, you've seen the advertisements for my pillow. I can't do that. I can't sleep on my side. I've got sleep apnea. Maybe it's because I'm getting old. I don't know. I don't have a CPAP machine, but I've had these sleep apnea episodes where you stop breathing, and it's a bad feeling. You get start breathing again. And I wish I didn't have those feelings. I just don't want to start using a CPAP. You know what I mean? I don't want to have something. I know a lot of people do, and that's what you do that. More power to you, you know. That's what you feel you need to do. And maybe I'll change my mind. In fact, I'm waiting for them, the CPAP people, to call me. It seems like this one company that my local primary care manager called last year, they were supposed to have gotten back with me. They never did. So I called the other day. I said, what happened with those people? So they called them up. They said they closed the ticket, the referral, because I don't know why. But they were supposed to call me like within 3 or 4 days, and that was almost 2 weeks ago. But I'm not in a hurry. I'm not in a hurry to get a CPAP machine, you know. But ever since I've been sleeping without a pillow, again, I mean, I've tried sleeping with a pillow on my side, back, thin pillow, large pillow. But that's what works best for me. And I looked on the internet, and there's a lot of other people, there's a lot of information in there about sleeping without pillow. Now, don't go doing something without checking with your doctor first, because you might say, well, I heard on Blake Ruby's show that he said I could sleep without a pillow and it'd be okay. And I wound up hurting myself some way, and so I don't want a lawsuit, you know. But do the research. Check it out if you're interested. If you're having problems with your neck and your back, the science is when you sleep without a pillow, your spine gets a chance to extend. You can extend your spine. Some people will say, the experts will say, well, you need some support under your neck when you sleep at night. Well, no. I mean, check it out. People throughout our history, over the centuries, been sleeping without a pillow. In some countries around the world to this day, they don't sleep with pillows. They don't need to. You might want to put your coat underneath your head at night, you know, to keep the insects away from your falling inside your ears, but just do the research. But if you're fine and if you're using your MyPillow or whatever, the Angel Sleeper pillow, I just ordered one for my wife, That's fine. I'm just saying what works for me. And because my back is different than other people's. I mentioned I have a back condition. So sleeping without a pillow has helped me. No kidding. The last 7 years when I was in the Army, from 1997 to 2004, I slept without a pillow. And then I retired, came up to Alexandria, Virginia from Venezuela, and I got a Tempur-Pedic bed. And I bought one of those Tempur-Pedic contour pillows, and I was just sleeping on my back for 4 years. And then I decided that wasn't fun anymore, so I got a conventional mattress, and I started using the pillow, sleeping on my side. But inevitably what happens for me when I sleep on my side is that one nostril or the other would get blocked up, you know, and that's no fun. So what do I do to unblock my nostrils? Oh, you're learning everything about Blake in this show, aren't you? I take cold showers. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, especially in the summertime, it's very appropriate. Now, in the wintertime, it's a little bit harder. You know, I like to take two showers a day, one in the morning, one in the evening, one just before bed, one just before bed. And cold showers, there's a lot of benefits. Again, don't go doing this, okay, until you check with your doctor first. All right? Cold showers are good in many ways. Do the research if you don't believe me on the Internet. They help with the immune system. They help with your sex drive. Oh, yeah. They help with your breathing, circulation. And there's a lot of benefits. It's called, there's a website on the Internet called The Art of Manliness. And one other thing about taking cold showers is it teaches you to be tough. It toughens you up, puts you in unpleasant situations, and helps you overcome them. Not only that, but it's good for your hair and your skin. How about that, huh? Cold showers. I've been taking cold showers on and off, I would say, over the last 5 years, no kidding, about 95, 96, 97% of the time. One in the morning, one in the evening. And I feel good. My breathing is on automatic all day. And guess what? It'll help you with your allergies. Serious. Hot showers will dry the skin. Now, I'm not, you can do what you want to do. You got free will. You're a co-creator God in the making, just like my website says, yes. You're going to reincarnate down the road into the future. Yeah. After you die, you will reincarnate. You go to heaven for a while, enjoy the scenery, have parties, party time. Oh, it's going to be great. You get to meet all your deceased relatives, all the pets that you've owned before, people from all different cultures throughout the history of this world will be there. That's right. There is no religion in heaven. There's only one truth, my friends, and that's universal truth. And there's angels everywhere. There's chariots taking people. There's kind of like roadways with chariots. There are roads that are paved with gold, dude. You better believe it. You better... It's true. And guess what? Besides gold, there's silver, a lot of beautiful silver, polished silver, pearl, marble, precious jewels everywhere. And the colors are more intense. The grass is greener. The trees are greener. The trees, some of the trees of life have delicious fruit that you can eat. Yes, you can eat when you're in heaven. But you don't have bodily functions like you do here on earth. Isn't that great? Won't that be great? Wonderful? Yes. There's mountains, valleys, rivers, lakes, seas. And you get to meet some really cool people from all walks of life. I mean, just think of all the people that in our recent past, presidents, movie stars, sports stars, they're all going to be there. Rock and roll stars, movie stars, I mean, yeah, I said that. Music stars, you know, all the great musicians from the past, rock stars. Now, some may have gone through like different, I think some might have gone to hell, which is beneath the surface of the earth, in accordance with my beliefs. But it's possible. But that's not eternal damnation. Because guess what? Your mother and father, God, are very forgiving and loving. You have to pay the penalty for your wrongdoing, but it's not eternal. No good mother or father would do that to their children, right? We are the children of our mother and father, God, in heaven. Co-creator gods in the most times. on the sun, the spirit world, that world of fire, the source of all light in our solar system. I, the supreme creator now, the creator of the entire universe, who initiated the Big Bang, is different. That's why we are the sons and daughters of the supreme creator, really. And this life is for you to learn to increase your light of your soul. Your soul is like a lamp. I get into my this tone of voice, don't I? I sound like I'm teaching. I'm getting on my high horse. Anyway, so I was talking about cold showers. Now, I told you a little bit about me. Now I'm going to get to my reading, which I like to do. Okay? So I'm going to tell you about this. I think I've only got time for this one near-death experience, which is really cool. The man's name is Arthur Janssen, and he lived back around the 30s when the U.S., coincidentally, was going through a depression at the time. So let me set this up so I could read. I love reading out loud. If you want to improve yourself, become an actor or a public speaker, reading out loud is an excellent way to do that because you're coordinating your voice, you're speaking with reading words. Check it out on the internet, reading out loud. That's why children like to be read stories at nighttime because it sounds so good. Because they know it's good for the people who are doing that, okay? So here we go. Arthur Janssen, his near-death experience. I might have to take a few drinks of water because my mouth is getting a little bit dry. I like to take my time doing this, too. I've got about 20 minutes. Time does fly. I could use another hour. Thank you, BBS Radio. Here we go. Arthur Janssen was another near-death experiencer who received knowledge of reincarnation. In August of 1932, Janssen, a university graduate, geologist, and staunch materialist, hey, an atheist, in other words, turned syndicated cartoonist, decided to take some time off to research his weekly cartoon strip, Adventurous Willy Wispo. Since his main character was a hobo, Janssen became a hobo for a time, blending in with the over 16 million unemployed at that time in our nation's greatest depression. He bummed rides from Chicago through Minnesota until a young man in convertible coupe picked him up on the way to Winnipeg. Going too fast for the road conditions, the car hit a 3-foot-high ridge of oiled gravel and flipped into a series of violent somersaults. Both men were catapulted through the cloth top before the car smashed into a ditch. The driver escaped unharmed, but Janssen was injured, losing consciousness just as two female spectators rushed to his aid. After seeing the afterlife during his near-death experience, he later learned that telling others about his NDE, near-death experience, often brought criticism, especially from the church. Right. But there were those who would listen, and as time wore on, more and more people would ask him about it. Finally, 1955, Arthur Janssen published a report of his near-death experience after much public interest. His booklet, entitled I Saw Heaven, now out of print, describes his NDE and gives answers to questions he was always asked. On this webpage, I have some excerpts from his booklet. By the way, this website is called neardeath.com, near-death.com. Check it out. It has an incredible amount of information on near-death experiences. People who saw God have these experiences, you'll love it. So he said, I felt as if I were coming loose from my body. While I believed that my body was me, I knew instinctively that if I separated from it, I'd be dead. My soul and body started separating again and continued. Don't forget, he's had this car accident. Car flipped several times. You know, it happens, right? You see it on the road all the time. And continued to separate until I felt a short, sharp pain in my heart, which felt as if something had been torn loose. Then slowly and softly, I rose out through the top of my head. Gradually, the earth seemed faded away,
and up through it loomed a bright, new, beautiful world. Beautiful beyond imagination. For half a minute, I could see both worlds at once. The earth fading away, and the other world looming up brighter and brighter and still brighter. Finally, when the earth was all gone, I stood in a glory that could only be heaven. In the background were two beautiful mountains similar to Fujiyama of Japan. The tops were snow-capped, and the slopes were adorned with foliage of indescribable beauty. Since there was no pollution, haze, or other obstructions to mar one's vision, all the details were sharp and clear. The mountains appeared to be about 15 miles away. Yet I could see individual flowers growing on their slopes. I estimated my vision to be about 100 times better than on Earth. While I stood there marveling, I saw 20 people beyond the first tree, playing a singing dancing game, something like Skip to My Loo. They were having a hilarious time, holding hands, dancing in a circle, fast and lively. They're singing their laughter, and even their shouting was melodious. As soon as they saw me, four of the players left the game and joyfully skipped over to greet me. As they approached, I estimated their ages to be 130, 220, and 112. Their bodies seemed almost weightless, and the grace and beauty of their easy movements was fascinating to watch. As the heaven people gathered around, the oldest, largest, and strongest-looking man announced pleasantly, "You are in the land of the dead. We lived on Earth, just like you, till we came here." With unbounded enthusiasm, I shouted, "This is wonderful." "It's marvelous," they answered. Then with delight, they told me how I could swim around in the lake as long as I pleased, and when I came out, I'd be dry. Another one said, "You can run, tramp, jump, dance, sing, and play as much as you want, and you'll never get tired." Then I noticed that the landscape was gradually becoming familiar. It seemed as if I'd been here before. I remembered what was on the other side of the mountains. Then with a sudden burst of joy, I realized that this was my real home. Back on Earth, I've been a visitor, misfit, and a homesick stranger. Isn't that true, my friends? Earth is not our home. We're a visitor here. With a sigh of relief, I said to myself, "Thank God I'm back again. This time I'll stay." Then the oldest man, who looked like a Greek god, continued to explain. "Everything over here is pure. The elements don't mix or break down as they do on Earth. Everything is kept in place by an all-pervading master vibration, which prevents aging. That's why things don't get dirty or wear out, and why everything looks so bright and new." Then I understood how heaven could be eternal. Next, I noticed that I was loving everything and everybody, hey, and that it was making me intensely happy. Apparently, only the good in me had survived, without the bad, which is discord. And I was happy beyond everything I had ever known. My next question was, how do you explain this intense happiness? Your thoughts are vibrations which are controlled by the master vibration. It neutralizes all negative thoughts and lets you think only the good thoughts, such as love, freedom, and happiness. Then what becomes of the old grouches? If they are too bad, they go to a realm of lower vibrations where their kind of thoughts can live. If they came here, the master vibration would annihilate them. After death, people gravitate into homogeneous groups according to the rate of their soul's vibration. That's what I always knew, too. Isn't that something? If the percent of discord in a person is small, it can't be eliminated by the master vibration. Then the remaining good can live on here. For example, if a person were 70% good and 30% bad, the bad could be eliminated by the master vibration and the remaining good welcomed into heaven. However, if the percentage of bad were too high, this couldn't be done, and the person would have to gravitate to a lower level and live with people of his own kind. In the hereafter, each person lives in the kind of heaven or hell that he prepared for himself while on earth. Hey, pay attention to that, my friends out there. It behooves you to do good here on earth, to think good thoughts, say good things, no vulgar language, right? Because there will be a day of judgment, a reckoning day. You know that. I don't need to tell you. So you want to go to a good place, don't you? Instead of a bad place, I've read many, many near-death experiences in the places where some people go because they don't believe in God. They might be murderers, rapists, sexual abusers, physical abusers, people who are addicted to cigarettes. Oh, not good during a pandemic, my friend. Or alcohol. Oh, demon alcohol. Not good. I don't drink alcohol. I've given it up. Now, I won't judge you because I used to do that. I'm just saying, for me, I can't do it. I was haunted when I used to drink. My dad, too. But you got free will, and you're God. That's your God. That's what you want to do. Go ahead. Do it. Continuing on. So we know that people gravitate into the groups that they belong with according to how they live their life on earth. If you threw a small pebble into a threshing machine, it would go into the box, not because it is good or bad, but because of its proper size and weight. It's the same way here. No one sends you anywhere. Hey, how about that? You are sorted by the high or low vibrations of your soul. This is the brain of your spirit, right? Everything goes, everyone goes where he fits in, he or she fits in. High vibrations indicate love and spiritual development, while low vibrations indicate debasement and evil. When I asked what a person should do while on earth to make it better for him when he dies, he answered, here you go, pay attention to this, please. All you can do is develop along the lines of unselfish love. People don't come here because of their good deeds or because they believe in this or that, but because they fit in and belong. Good deeds are the natural result of being good, and bad deeds are the natural result of being bad. Each carries its own reward and punishment. It's what you are that counts. While we talked, my mind, or whatever I had to think with, became crystal clear instantly and without effort. I could remember everything I had ever known. I seemed to understand the earth and all about it. I don't know you that well, my friends. We're getting to know each other better, huh? The whole scheme of life was plain as day. Everything on earth has its purpose. It all fits into a pattern which will, in the end, work out for justice and good. People worry because of their incomplete viewpoints. They don't realize that trouble is nature's way of teaching lessons that won't be learned otherwise. If we'd only learn from other people's troubles, we could avoid most of our own, my friend. While we were still talking, and I was enjoying the ecstasy of heaven, my friend gently announced, "You can't stay here any longer. We have to go back to Earth." Back to Earth? Oh, no, not back to that horrible place. So, now I've got just a few minutes, if that much time, my friend. It's gone by quickly. And so, I don't even want to start with anything else because there's no time. Anyway, when you say a prayer, and forgive me if I judge you in any way, as I mentioned, you are all cool here. Okay. Got 1 minute, so I'm going to ask you to do something for me, please. we want to help this virus to end, right? The coronavirus, because there's a lot of people dying, and they're probably going to that place I just mentioned, most of them, because I think most people are good. And you might not have a really serious addiction, and I'm not here to judge you, but I'll just say this. My prayer is, God, Supreme Creator, please bless us, everyone. Thank you for the beauty everywhere, this beautiful world. We love you. We love you. We love you. Say that kind of prayer, my friend, for everybody. Thank you, and I'll see you next week. Talk to you next week. Bye-bye.